Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a monkey-rific episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulaski, and everything sucks. Well, not everything. You YouTube viewers, you got a treat and got to see me in my costume because tonight is Halloween. But I feel like perhaps nobody can hear me because of the mask. And also, you know, I just want to stick it to those podcast listeners. I love you guys, but I always do something special for the YouTubers. But I'm going to take this mask off now because it's hot in here. And we'll talk. How about SmackDown? I'm drinking the lemonade tonight. Extra sour powers. Sour power. Yeah. I have to remind myself how great the end of SmackDown was. Because somewhere in the middle of SmackDown, it was so not great. So you have to weigh the good with the bad. In this case, this is the analogy I'm descending on. Imagine, like, do you know what ambrosia is? Ambrosia is the food of the gods. It is what the gods on Mount Olympus dined upon. It is food that is for were a mortal to taste it, their brain would explode from the pleasure centers would be so overloaded by the mere taste of this wonderful food. Imagine Roman and Jey Uso, that is the food of the gods, the nectar of the gods, if you will. And imagine the nectar of the gods has been infused into the most juicy piece of filet mignon that's in the history of cooked meat. And it's sitting there on your plate, and you're about to dig into it. And you ask the waiter, excuse me, what's this all over it? Is this the kind of interesting spice? And the waiter says, oh, no, monsieur, that's a light dusting of insect feces. And you say, well, I don't like that. I don't want to eat that. Well, that's the only way we serve that particular dish of the food of the gods. You're going to have to choke down all of that insect feces to get to the wonderful juicy meat at the center of that filet mignon. You're like, well, maybe I'll just eat around it. Nope, sorry, you got to take big bites out of it. That's just the rules of this metaphorical restaurant I've created in my head. And that's it. What is the greatest dish of food you've ever had in your life? And would you want to eat it again if you knew it was covered in a light dusting of insect feces? Does the amazing on SmackDown outweigh the disgusting? Short answer, yes. For now. They're going to have to keep up an amazing pace of amazing to outweigh. I don't know how much better. I don't know how much better this Roman and Jey Uso storyline can get. I know it can get better, but I don't know how much it can get better. I know for a fact how much worse this Buddy Murphy and a teenager story can get. And if the Roman and Jey thing holds steady, it plateaus, it doesn't get much better week to week, And this Buddy Murphy and the teenager story keeps going up and up and up and up. Or in this case, down and down and down and down into the gutter, and then past the gutter into the pits of hell. I don't know how much longer the amazing will outweigh the disgusting. But I guess we'll have to see. I guess we'll have to see. I'll get to the SmackDown Hell in a Cell stuff as we go through it. So, obviously, although, yeah, the Roman and Jay stuff at Hell in a Cell. I know I am often given to hyperbole. That is one of my rhetorical tricks. If something is bad, it's the worst thing that's ever happened. It doesn't mean that it's not bad, that I exaggerate how bad it is. It just means that, you know, it's like, nah, that was bad, like 4 out of 10. It's a lot more fun. And, you know, I feel like keeps the interest of the viewer or listener more if I say that is the most disgusting shit that's ever happened. In the case of the Buddy Murphy storyline, though, I might not be exaggerating. Anyway, I'm often given to hyperbole, especially when I'm talking about things that I hate. There are so few things that I genuinely love in WWE that I try not to do the same thing with the things that I praise. I had a segment on Randy turning on Edge the night after the Royal Rumble. It got such a response from Sour Graps viewers, we cut it and put it on the regular site. Like edited it out and said, here's the thing, because it was one of the first times I'd ever actually been super effusive in my praise of a segment that I loved. And I did. I loved it. And that we talked about recently. The Edge and Orton thing, like, I don't know how much of it is due to COVID, but it kind of fizzled for me. The match at Mania wasn't great because they were trying to put a hat on a hat on a hat on a hat. Too many things in the backstage brawl going on. You know, they tried to make it more than it needed to be. And obviously that match was supposed to be at WrestleMania in front of, you know, tens of thousands of screaming fans, and the catharsis that would have happened when Edge beat Randy in probably what it would have been, like, I don't know, maybe just a straight up no DQ match, but in the ring, not like backstage or whatever. It still would have been so amazing. And then they decided, well, let's run it back again, and we'll do it at Backlash in the greatest wrestling match to have ever occurred. And of course, nothing can live up to that. So it was great, but it didn't live up to that. You set the bar too high. Always under-promise and over-deliver. Never the opposite. If you over-promise, then if you say something is going to be the greatest match that's ever happened, and instead we just get like a legitimate classic all-time great match, but not the greatest ever, people are going to be disappointed. So don't do that. So I loved the Randy thing and the Randy and Edge, but mostly the Randy part of it and how great that was. And I'm so disappointed now that Randy is what it is here now, because I don't love that. I want to explain the on Twitter this week. I want so desperately for all wrestling to be great. All wrestling. I focus more on WWE property and AEW because that's what I review for this website. I don't watch enough Impact to know of their day-to-day stuff, although killing a dude in storyline, come on. But like this, with NXT and AEW on Wednesday, I'm never, I don't let them off the hook. I tell it how it is. But if there's something I don't like, I try to give them leeway because I know AEW is just starting out and they have their, all their flaws. Absolutely. Do I have faith in them that they will overcome them if I give them some time to figure out what the flaws are and address them? Yes. Although clock's ticking on your women's division and how you present them. But I do believe eventually they'll get there. NXT, I go easy on them because I still feel like they're the neglected little stepbrother who always feels like they have to prove something. And I feel their pain. And so I understand, okay, this is wrong. This booking decision didn't work. I have to, I'm angry, but I'm going to let you try and fix this down the road. With WWE, fuck them. I mean, they've had too many chances at this point. They continue to make everything worse. You know? But I still want all of WWE and AEW to be great. It would make me so happy if, like, for like, I don't know, a month straight, I'd come on Sour Graps and I go, well, I got nothing to complain about. Everything was perfect. Like, there was this one minor quibble here, but they, if they change this to this, it turns out great. I would love that. It would make me so happy if wrestling was great and I had nothing to complain about. As it is, though. So, when something like this Jey Uso and Roman Reigns Hell in a Cell match, I Quit match takes place and I get to sit and watch it, and I just absentmindedly put my phone down and just don't even think to scroll or anything. Like, I'm just locked on my television to watch it. Like, how rare that is, that I'm like completely engrossed in the story of the match and all of the things surrounding it, even though I know there's no possible way that Jey Uso can win. The getting to wherever they're going to go to get to that point, it was so great. All of it. Their banter in the ring, so much, like, you could tell the history that they had. The spots were really good, but at the end, when Jey was out cold, and the ref wanted to stop the match, so Roman just chucked the ref out of the ring, and like, ain't nobody stopping this shit. Like, no, we're not doing that. He's got to say, I quit. And then all the officials come down. They can't stop Roman. Nobody can stop Roman. He's a force of nature. But that moment where he raises the steps above his head to crush the skull of his cousin, and Jimmy runs in and cradles his unconscious brother, and he says, man, this is Josh. What are you doing? Like, just that moment of them just dropping all artifice and being like, man, what are you doing? We grew up together. What? Who are you? And Roman dropping the stairs and sitting on his ass in the middle of the ring, starting to cry and saying, I don't even know who I am anymore. And Jimmy's there like, man, it's okay. Whatever you're going through, we got you, man. We're family. We'll get through this together. And Roman, like, the camera pushes in on him. All these shots, like, this is, again, I'm watching this thing going, this is the proof that you can do this more often than once in a fucking generation. You have the capability of doing amazing fucking work. Just do this more often than you do the bad shit, at least. But Roman, man, he's doing some otherworldly work. Him snatching up Jimmy when Jimmy offers a hand, the handshake, putting Jimmy in the guillotine, Jimmy just grabbing it at Jey, who's unconscious, and Jey wakes up to see his brother being choked out. And he says, I quit, only to save his brother. I do have one minor quibble. And again, it's not with anybody, anything that in the ring are doing. It's with the announcing. Like, Roman puts Jimmy in a guillotine choke, which I would assume affects the neck. He's cranking on the neck. And also, you know, it'll knock you unconscious. It'll, it cuts your air off. But it affects your neck. And Corey's like, Jimmy Uso just had knee surgery. He's been put in a guillotine choke. Yes, the very famous knee-destroying submission move, the guillotine choke. You didn't need that comment. It just belies everything. Like, would it have been, like, more impactful, I suppose, if Roman, like, dropped dropped Jay into, like, a single-leg Boston Crab and just sat deep into it, just cranking back on that knee, and the screams of, like, him, his surgery being torn apart was what woke up Jay, and Jay had to say, I quit, to save his brother's career? Would that have been a little better? Yes. But man, it's hard to improve on near perfection, because that fucking thing was all my jam. I really loved it. Is it what I see all the time? No. I quit matches are usually pretty dull. Like, what do you say? What do you say? You want to say I quit? He doesn't say I quit. Ask him again. What do you say? What do you say? Want to say I quit? He says no. He says he doesn't want to. Ask him again. Well, now we're just going to do that for 40 minutes. The thing that saved it was the interaction between Roman and Jay, which was just outstanding. So Jay says I quit. And Afa and Sika come out looking every bit as old as they are, plus, I don't know, 20 years. They looked 112 years old. They looked like, you know, when the villain in Last Crusade drinks water from the wrong cup? And then he turns to dust. There's a point where he gets really old, and then he decomposes. The whole thing takes about, I don't know, 8.5 seconds. Afa and Sika look like they're about second four. They're about halfway through turning to dust. I feel for them, man. Like, this guy's been through some shit. Like, they're doing wrestling back in the day. My God. It definitely will add some years to you, but they looked it. So, last night, we start with Roman coming out so that Jay will officially tell Roman that he is the tribal chief and he's the head of the table, and because that's the punishment. You quit, now you have to do this. And if you don't do it, we're going to cut you out of the family. And now we get to see Jay Uso just absolutely just kick ass. Like, you never made me quit. You never beat me. You didn't beat me. I said I quit to save Jimmy. You knew that was the only person in this world that I would have said I quit for. And Roman's like, you're damn right I knew that. Yeah, of course. That's why I did it. What do you think? Like, just Roman is just so calm through this whole thing. Just a beautiful veneer of, because fuck you, that's why. That's what Roman is at the whole time. You can make all your excuses. The thing is, you quit, so you lost. So now you got to bend the knee. You got to fall in line. Everybody, the entire family is backing me. So if you don't do this, then you're out of the family. And Uso just, oh my God. Uso is, I hate you. Why are you doing this to me? I hate you. Just keeps repeating that. Right in Roman's face. And Roman says, I have no doubt that you do hate me right now. And I understand why. But the thing of it is, I love you. Like how, fuck, what a twist of the knife that is. It's so great, all this. I mean, like, from what I understand, it's Roman, it's Jay, and it's Paul. That's it. Those are the people who are crafting this thing, and bravo. Greatest storyline I've seen in WWE in forever. Now, it could always crash and burn. All it takes is Vince to be like, no, I don't like it. Let's see if we can have more bad things in it. All it would take with Vince to be stick his little nose into it, and that's it. But so far, my God, it's so good. So, basically, Roman says, you got a decision to make. That's it. And Jay also has a match that's the main event versus Daniel Bryan for a spot in the Survivor Series team. I had a little mini rant, well, two of them actually, about Survivor Series shit on Monday. If you missed it, go back. My Tuesday night show a couple days ago. I'm not going to go into it again. Just tell me that the winning team of both the men's and women's shows, just tell me that they split $1 million. Simple, you know, it's simple. That's all I would need. That's all I would need. Tell me it's for money. And I understand. Like, that's a lot of money, especially these mid-carders who get there. Like, five people on the team, each guy gets $200,000 if they win. That's amazing. Maybe the survivors get a 50 grand bonus or something. Like, it would be so, it would make so much more sense for why people. Like, for example, Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler, they just got to SmackDown 6 minutes ago, and they are fighting tooth and nail as hard as they can to be on the SmackDown Survivor Series team so they can go up against, so far, AJ and Sheamus, who were on SmackDown until 6 minutes ago, who are now on the Raw Survivor Series team. You should do the draft after Survivor Series, because then it's the culmination of this thing. Wouldn't that solve a lot of these stupid logical fallacies that you have here, where somebody is like, if somebody's been on Raw all year, they've created bonds with these people. They're going to go to war with each other. After Survivor Series, things can get shaken up. That's the much better thing. It's a much better thing to do. So do that instead. I think that would solve a lot of problems. Because here's the thing. If Big E is on the SmackDown team as part of the Survivor Series squad, right? And the New Day is the tag champs. Like Kofi and Xavier, they're part of that tag match. But Big E, let's say he goes on and he's one of the survivors from SmackDown. Raw sees that and they say, we're going to snap him up. And we're going to make him a face of our brand because he kicked our ass. So they draft him by himself. Because they made a deal with SmackDown. SmackDown says, no, we keep New Day. It's like, we're taking Big E. Okay, but then we get to keep our tag champs. That's fine. We just want Big E. Like, there you go. That's all that whole thing, the thing we all hated. It's solved by having the draft after Survivor Series instead of a month before. Kevin Owens versus Dolph is a very good match. I rag on Dolph a lot because he deserves it, but it doesn't mean he can't still go in the ring. It just means his character is fucking stale as hell. And he gets titles that he doesn't, he gets title shots he doesn't deserve all the time. But I mean, he could deserve them if they made the character more appealing and booked him to win matches and be better. He might deserve it, but he doesn't. So I get pissy when he gets title matches back to back fucking weeks for no reason. But this match is great. The pop up power bomb countered into a Famouser, fantastic. There's a great the finish is fantastic. The kick, super kick, caught, spun around into a stunner, great. A couple of things of note. Owens wrestling in jeans now, perfect. I mean, get the basketball shorts was fine too, but I just love the jeans thing. Like I woke up, I cut the sleeves off my t-shirt, I taped up my wrists, let's fucking go. Cool. Works for him. I like it. Also, Sean also mentioned this on the post show last night. If this is the start of something where if you are at ringside supporting your friend, you don't have to wear your fucking gear. Oh, that's such a little touch that I love. Like Rude was out there looking like a normal human being. Like he was like, after the match, you want to go down to Applebee's and grab a bite, get a drink, watch the game. Just a dude wearing clothes, not his trunks. He's not wearing a fucking shiny robe. He's not wrestling. He doesn't have to be in his gear. Like that's so much better to me. So much better. But again, he Kevin Owens won, so now he gets to represent SmackDown, the place he's been for 12 seconds. And good for Kevin. He walks down to the announcer's desk and says into Cole's microphone that is like, you know, here. So he's wearing the headset. He's got the microphone here. So Kevin walks over, grabs the microphone, yanks it up to his face. SmackDown's about to become the KO show. Just wanted to let you know. I do love KO. I think he's great. Sure, I'm not skipping anything here. Okay. So, back from the break, we get a little backstage segment. It's entertaining enough. Assistant to the regional manager, general manager Adam Pearce is backstage, and he's trying to talk to Natalya and Billy Kay and Bianca Belair about how they're going to pick the SmackDown women's team. Evidently not the same way they're going to choose it on Raw, which I guess I buy because they're two different shows. But Adam Pearce appears to be in charge of both. He is the sole on-screen authority figure for on both Monday and Friday, but they appear to have wildly different ways of choosing the women's women's Survivor Series teams. Like, there's like, so it's going to be Nia and Shayna and Mandy and Dana. And then the other four women just, you know, figure it out in this match, I guess. But on SmackDown, Natalya's like, I should be the captain because I'm the boat, and that nickname's going to stick around forever, I guess. And Billy Kay, I love Billy Kay. I really like Peyton Royce as well. Billy Kay is the comedy glue that held that team together. Peyton Royce was there mostly trying not to corpse, because Billy Kay was being so funny. They were really great together. While I think that Peyton Royce is stronger in ring than Billy Kay, I don't think she's that much stronger. And Billy Kay, again, could go down in history if used properly as the greatest comedy seller in women's wrestling history. Like, she's got great comedic timing, and her reactions to things are so good. I love watching her, and I feel like she's just going to be just like, just cast aside. But every time she gets on screen, she's going to do something that's going to make me chuckle. She comes out with a headshot with a resume printed on the back. And that's why we get jobs in the acting world. It's a thing, the headshot and resume. He says, it's like, she shows, if you can see on my resume, I have experience in working as part of a team. So then Natalia takes the resume away. I don't need a resume because I'm the best ever. I'm the boat. Bianca Belair comes in with her girl, and her clapping and whatnot, and being EST, the strongest, the fastest, smartest. It's the best of the best. Oh, by the way, that's the new tagline for Survivor Series this year. Best of the best, not including NXT. This was all cute and everything, but the three of you, says Adam Pearce, assistant to the regional manager, general manager, Adam Pearce, says, the three of you, you can have a match next, and the winner will all be on the team. She doesn't say, critically, the losers will be off the team. She says the winner gets a guaranteed spot. So there aren't enough women on SmackDown for you to eliminate both Natalia and Billie Kay from contention at this point. At the end of Raw, we knew the entire team of the Women's Survivor Series team for Raw. At the end of SmackDown, spoiler alert, we know one person. It's Bianca Belair, but we'll get to that in a second. Because I guess they thought they needed to tell us, the match flow from Progressive is a retrospective of Daniel Bryan's entire career. Like, going back to winning the titles at Mania 30, which is 6 fucking years ago. Like, they kind of gloss over the whole, I had to retire because my brains were scrambled, or at least these fucking guys' doctor told me my brains were scrambled, but I'm cool now and I'm back. I guess I just wanted, like, you know, it's, he has said it's time for the younger people to get put over, and that's my job. I'm on my way out. This is my last run as a full-time wrestler. I'm going to put some people over on my way out the door. What a great guy he is. Apparently, he's like a de facto member of the creative team. He's the guy who, like, suggested Big E get a singles push and everything. It's great. Anyway, after that, we get a sit-down interview with Lars Sullivan, freaky freak. Although they aren't calling him that anymore, and I wonder if this whole thing was an elaborate justification for, hey, everybody's talking about how we're calling him the freak so much. Should we maybe not call him the freak so much? Yeah, maybe you're right. Let's do an incredibly awkward sit-down interview where we explain all the reasons why we're not going to call him the freak anymore. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, but my God. Graves says, Lars, can I call you Lars? That's very cute and all, but wouldn't you want to call me the freak? Lars is a very... He does not sound the way you would think he would sound. He's got a little bit of a palate thing that's causing him to, it's not a lisp, but there's definitely some air going through that shouldn't go through. Like, it's almost like he can't close his mouth all the way. So are you sure you don't want to call me the freak? There was a moment there where Lars was still in NXT where he was given promos that made him, he used really big, we used to call them $5 words. Like, somebody took a thesaurus and was like, let's find all the big words he can use instead of the ones we would normally use. And I was like, that's interesting. This giant guy who's basically like a genius. That's a Marvel villain. This like scientific genius who like takes a serum or is bombarded with radiation or something and turns into a giant muscular freak, for lack of a better word, but retains all the stuff in his brain that made him a genius. That's a cool idea for a character. They still have never gone to that place again, and I still think it's possible they could do that. Maybe not with him or with somebody else, but I think it's a cool idea for a character. This is just him being like, I remember the first time people called me the freak. I was 9 or 10 years old. I was in a playground at school. And this pair of brothers, the Tracy brothers, they were taunting him. They were singing a song. Freak show, freak show. Everyone look at the freak show. Nobody helped me. I didn't know what to do. What did I do? I cried. I hoped that somebody would show me some kindness, but then nobody stopped. When they saw me cry, they started laughing. All of them, the brothers and the other kids, the teachers even laughed at me. But now I'm laughing. Because about 20 minutes later, the laughing stopped. And the crying stopped. But the screams went on for hours. They didn't let me go back to school after that. So at 9 or 10 years old, Lars murdered a pair of brothers? Or at least tortured them? And Graves, ever the master interviewer, does have a follow-up. He's not like, what happened to the brothers? Or did you do time for murder? I mean, I'm assuming they didn't try you as an adult, seeing as you were 9, but what happened? Graves like, so what do you plan here on WWE? Like, I murdered 2 children when I was a child myself. Well, that's very interesting. What are your plans here? Like, that's what? Like, this man just confessed to at least maiming children when he was a child himself. And your big follow-up is, what do you plan to accomplish in WWE? Fucking ridiculous. Well, I would like to put a lifetime of pain and humiliation to anybody who gets in my way. I'm going to make this entire world my playground. And I'm going to make this world my personal hell on earth. Great. Good for you, Lars. I don't know, man. I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but it's just weird. Speaking of weird, there are a few people that they are. I mean, I know it's just 1 week of TV, and I know it's the 2-hour show and not the 3-hour show. Hey, since the draft, no Baron Corbin. Which, believe me, I'm fine with. If they keep him off TV until the Rumble, and when he shows up, he's got a completely different look. There's no crown, there's no scepter, none of that shit. I'll be fine with it. They drafted him pretty high to never use him. Just saying. Also, Aleister Black, drafted low, but they made a big deal about how he came over in the draft. He actually got a chance to step forward from them. Remember that thing where Stephanie and Trips were in the ring? They were like, here's everybody who came over here. In particular, this guy, Aleister Black. And he hasn't been seen on TV since. I thought maybe they'd have something for him to do. Since for most of his time on Raw, he wasn't doing much. Maybe you get a change of pace. No. Apollo Crews hasn't been seen in 2 weeks. Last time we saw him, he was getting his ass kicked by Lars. Apollo Crews, United States champion for several months this summer. Drafted to SmackDown, off television. Chad Gable last week lost a match to Lars in the fucking trainer's room. I'm not Shorty D anymore. I'm not Shorty G anymore. I'm Longy D. He's Chad Gable now. Also, he's right back to being off TV. And not that I wanted to see him, but you just did a huge fucking angle where Otis was one of the faces of SmackDown. Mr. Money in the Bank. You did a whole angle where he was being sued by a guy who's now on Raw for custody of the Money in the Bank briefcase. His girlfriend got traded to Raw. His partner got drafted to Raw. I was decreed by bribed JBL that there should be a match at Hell in a Cell to see who gets to keep the briefcase, Miz or Otis. During said match at Hell in a Cell, Otis got clubbered in the face by the briefcase, which was done by Tucker. Tucker turned on him. Tucker's now on Raw. Mandy Rose is now on Raw. Miz is now on Raw. We've already seen the aftermath for the Miz. The Miz comes out with the thing, taunting Drew McIntyre, gets his brains beating by McIntyre. Eventually, he's going to try and cash in on somebody and lose. Otis, again, for better or for worse, one of the faces of SmackDown, drafted to SmackDown to stay on SmackDown. Tucker was not drafted to SmackDown. They didn't want to keep him as a tag team. They wanted to keep him as a singles guy. Money in the briefcase. Money in the Bank. Lost the briefcase. The following SmackDown, no mention of Otis. None. Not. He's not here because he's dealing with some stuff. You're feeling like, you know, he lost the briefcase or whatever, blah, blah. No mention, no recap of that match. No mention of Otis at all. I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting, or I don't think I really wanted anything, but it's just weird that you would spend all this time with this guy building him up and then like just, meh. I know it's just 1 week. It'll mean something if it's next week. For example, over on Raw, not to get off track here, but remember those? Anybody? Old-timey Fightful people? Off track with A-Train? That was a lifetime ago. Not to get off track, but Ricochet. Do you remember Ricochet's last appearance on Raw? He won a match versus Cedric Alexander. Again, this feels like it was a fucking month ago. He won a match against Cedric Alexander via, you know, the old Eddie Guerrero thing where he makes the ref think that his opponent has hit him with a chair. So he wins via disqualification. And because of that, the Hurt Business has to leave him alone. He's not going to be in any more Hurt Business segments. Well, because of that, he's not on TV. So he won a match. Basically, it was a do you want to be on TV or not match. Because if he had lost, he would have had to join the Hurt Business. And the Hurt Business appears to be on TV like in 4 segments every week. So maybe you would think maybe Ricochet would want to be a part of the Hurt Business. It just was a weird thing. They did this draft and they moved people around and they kept people where they were. And now, nothing. Maybe Ricochet will lose a qualifying match to be in on the Raw Survivor Series team next week. We don't know. Maybe. So, okay. So this is where we get into this thing. I'm going to quickly just do this fucking three-way match. Bianca wins. The right person won. Billy does some really good comedy stuff in here. There's a lot of really sloppy waiting around triple threat spots to do. The right person won. Billy Kay tries to be sneaky a few times to no avail. She's the one who takes the pin. Bianca wins. Bianca's the first member of, and still currently the only member of SmackDown Women's Survivor Series team. Okay, done with that? Okay, great. Back to this. Back to this fucking shit. I don't know if you remember the speaking out thing that happened over the summer. But there was a lot of stuff going around that men in wrestling were preying on younger women. Women who were, in some cases, younger than the age of consent. And men. Men preying on men who were younger than the age of consent. Some of those people still have jobs. Some of them don't. There were also some women who were over the age of consent, but also not far enough over the age of consent to really be emotionally stable enough to know what they were getting into with men who were full-grown adults. Grown-ass men, as they say. These grown-ass men in their 30s would, you know, seduce 19-year-olds and get them to, like, you know, not seduce them, but like, hey, want to come up to my room and you can talk to me about how much you love wrestling and all the things about it. Maybe we can, you know, figure out something, a school I can show you to or whatever. And then like, oh, would you like a drink? Come on, just one drink, blah, blah, blah. I'm getting a little tired. Would you mind giving me a massage? Oh, whoopsie daisy, I had sex with you. Shit like that was a little too prevalent for people's tastes, mine included. And so there were a lot of people who don't work in the business anymore. I don't mean to say that that's all the things that were happening. A lot of different things were happening. A lot of things that seemed not nearly as egregious as others, but still bad. And people need to know about it so that they know who they're giving their merch money to, who they're seeing on their TV in some cases. And some people were just let go. Flat out like, nope, sorry. Two credible accusations of rape, and you are making no money for us. Goodbye. Some people were left on television. Which brings us to this Murphy thing. This thing. Murphy is dating, I suppose you could say. A 19-year-old, a just 19-year-old. She turned 19 in August. And he turned 32 in September. So he's 32, and she is a year out of high school. She's technically of age to consent. So in case you were all worried about the technicality portion of things, technically, we're good. Technically, it's cool. Don't worry about it. Technically. But she's a year out of high school, and he's a grown-ass man, as they say, and he's in his 30s. If you had, well, let's say a daughter or a sister who was a year out of high school and started up a friendship with a guy who is in his 30s, and you have a problem with that, you're not the bad guy. You're looking out for your daughter or sister's well-being. Murphy, genuinely having feelings for this girl that he met like a month ago, being genuinely in love with her. Again, at age 32, if you're genuinely in love with a 19-year-old you met a month ago, that doesn't speak well of your emotional maturity level either. But Murphy, being genuinely in love with a 19-year-old he met a month ago and starting up a sexual ? Relationship with her, that's somehow the best possible outcome of this story? Because the other option that I think we all have forgotten about is the possibility, however remote it may be at this point, that this is all some kind of ruse perpetrated by Seth Rollins using Murphy in a way to drive a final stake through the heart of the Mysterio family by having Murphy pretend to be in love with this 19-year-old, making her in love with him, driving a horrible wedge between Dominic and Rey and their sister and daughter. So that when it's revealed that Buddy Murphy was lying the whole time, he was never in love. He just wanted to watch the Mysterios burn. Now that seems as a remote possibility now, but all it takes is for it to get in the brain of Vince McMahon and be like, that's such good shit. Oh, the heat it'll generate, pal. The heat. The best we can hope for at this point is that they're legitimately in love. And there will be a wedding. A wedding of this man in his 30s to this girl who is a year out of high school. That's the best we can hope for. Because love wins, I guess. We see them backstage. Like, apparently, Aaliyah's mom is totally supportive of her 19-year-old daughter striking up a relationship with a man in his 30s. In which case, I'm sorry, Angie, you're a bad mom. Especially, it's not just some random dude in his 30s. It's a guy who was, like, attacking her brother and father. You know, like, Buddy is doing a great job. Buddy Murphy is trying so hard to make this horrible shit work. He's like, I really need to apologize. I have to be the bigger man and apologize. I know what I did was wrong. The horrible things that I did to Dominic and to Rey. I need to apologize. I'm a different man now. A different man now? You did that shit to them 3 weeks ago. Like, I mean, I know it was longer than that, but come on, in the span of things, like, it was really recent. You're a completely different man now. Anyway. Murphy goes out to the ring with Aaliyah, arm in arm, to the ring, and he says, I really need Rey and Dominic, I need for you to come out here so I can apologize to you. And they don't come out, and so he asks them again, they don't come out, and I really need them, I really need you guys to come out. So Seth Rollins comes out, and he, you know, Rollins says, like, listen, you guys, I'm so happy for you guys. This is so great. And here's the thing. Murphy, Rey, and Dominic are never going to forgive you. They're never going to accept you as you are. They're never going to accept what's going on between the two of you, whatever that might be. I accept you. I will always accept you. I love you guys. And I accept relationship. But, you know, I would marry the two of you right here, right now, if we had a marriage license. There's a place for everyone in the greater good. And he talks to Aaliyah, says, I know your father and your brother won't accept you now anymore, but I will. You have to see, I've never been the bad guy here. It's always been Rey. So Dominic's a coward, blah, blah, blah. So Dominic attacks Rollins out of nowhere. Rollins, Murphy attacks Rollins when Rollins is able to hand, and then Dominic and Murphy start brawling when Rollins gets into the floor and Aliyah steps in between them. And then they now there's a huge brawl. Mysterio comes out. Mysterio's double team Murphy and they're setting up for the 619, but Aliyah gets in the way. Rey is just furious. How dare you do this? And then Aliyah says, I love him. I knew this was fucking coming. Weeks ago, you could sense it. I love him. The fans, boo. So Vince wants us to be on the side of Rey and Dominic right now. We'll see what happens after that. We'll see. Rey gives Aliyah one last chance. Dominic and Rey leave. And Murphy and Aliyah kiss. Long and slow and deep, like lovers do. Again, this would not be so bad if recently this company hadn't had to fire people for being sexual with girls who were way too young for them. Maybe not legally too young, but still too fucking young. I mean, they had to do other things too. There was rape involved. But as far as I can tell, this girl who is like a year and 3 months beyond the age of consent, apparently she's consenting. Good. I've known women who got to be in their 30s and remember being 19, 20 years old and getting into relationships with guys who were not even in their 30s, but like this girl that I knew who was in her 30s remembers being 20 and in a relationship with a dude who's 27 and he was playing her the whole time because he knew that he could prey on her naivete. Like, it's just, this happens. It happened in wrestling a lot. To play it as a storyline where we're supposed to root for the dude who is hitting on a teenager. He's hitting on a teenager, guys. And now in a wonderful, committed, healthy sexual relationship with a teenager. It's just, I don't know, man. It's just, it's shit, man. It's insect feces smeared all over my filet mignon, my ambrosia of the gods. If I am going to watch all of SmackDown, let's pretend you can't just, you know, DVR it and fast through forward through this shit, or you can't just watch the YouTube clips that you want. Imagine you have to watch all of SmackDown, like I do for this shit, for this show, not this shit. I have to watch that shit for this show. I have to watch every week as they do this horrible crap, so that I can then get rewarded with the Roman Reigns storyline. Daniel Bryan backstage, warming up. Kayla asks him like what Jey Uso went through earlier tonight, if that's going to change your mindset. And Bryan says, no. Changed my mindset is Jay's been pushing Roman Reigns to the limit. And Roman still has been able to beat Jay. Like, not really. So he's preparing for what the best Jay it is. So, yeah. Brian's great. And I love that he's being just an overall great dude. Whoever wins this match will be the best guy to be on Team SmackDown for Survivor Series. What? How magnanimous. But I love that his, like, dadhood has just basically, that's his whole thing now. It's just being a great dad. Now that's changed him. Non-title match, Street Profits versus Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. The champions win, so there was no reason for this not to be for the titles. None. Film a little shit where the Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura say we want those titles back because the New Day beat us and then scampered off to Raw. We never got our rematch. So we want those titles back. And Street Profits say, you're on. And then have the match. Because the Street Profits are going to win anyway. Clean. They won clean. Great. It's a good match. A lot of fun stuff. Really great spots. Cesaro basically just yeeted a man into the third row of the Thunderdome. That was great. There's some good spots here. Good match. Why wasn't it for the titles? I've talked about this before. If you book a championship, you book a match that the champions are in, and you know the champions are going to win that match, maybe for the titles. It just seems more important. There's something more on the line. Just do it that way. Street Profits win. So because they beat Shinsuke and Cesaro in a non-title match, I guess that means the only people left to challenge them are Rude, Steady, and B-Bolf. Again, the match was a good match, but it doesn't mean anything because it wasn't for the titles. Ford and Dawkins have a promo ahead of time where they talk about how they're going to beat the New Day because they're the young, hungry team, which is a good way. Of, like, you wouldn't think about, like, New Day's been around for 6 years, but they were the young, hungry team, and now you got some up and comers chasing them. That's a good story to tell. I don't trust them to tell it right, but that's a good story to tell. It's just a terrible promo. We were something, 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 blah, 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 blah. Dawkins says, tell him why, fam. And then Ford says, because the Street Profits are up and we want the smoke. We want the smoke used to mean give us your best shot. You know what I mean? Like, we want everything you can throw at us because we want to get better and we're still going to beat you, right? As champions, we want the smoke is a weird thing to be saying anyway. Also, I'm pretty sure it's a marijuana reference. Just putting that out there. Not saying anything either way. I mean, you know, cool. Legalize it, man. I honestly believe that. Legalize the fuck out of that shit. And everybody who's in jail for a marijuana charge should be released tomorrow. It's still just a weird thing that Vince has set up these guys who have legitimate drug references in their names. And also, do you know what this is? Remember, it's Street Profits, not P-R-O-F-I-T-S. Not P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S, Street Profits, not Street Profits. What are the profits you can make on the street? Like, I don't think that it's directly this, but certainly there's a reference there to drug peddling. I mean, I've watched The Wire. It's a weird thing. I think these guys are great. And it's a cool play on words, Street Profits. But what are the profits that you make on the street? What are you selling lemonade? The official beverage of Sour Graps? I don't know. Just something to think about. Or not. What do I fucking know? Sami Zayn cuts a pretty great promo about how the Intercontinental Champion is by default better than the United States Champion because he is the champion of all continents and all countries in all continents, and you, Bobby Lashley, are only the champion of one country, which I wish you had just gone, which, look around you, it's a fucking cesspool. There's an election in, I don't know, 48 hours-ish. There's an election in 48 hours-ish, and Walmart had to pull all guns and ammo off the shelves just in case a civil war breaks out. Yeah, no, we're peachy here. I'm not lying about that, by the way. Walmart has pulled all guns and ammo from their stores because they don't want people to be able to easily get guns and ammo. The SmackDown Women's Title match at Hell in a Cell was fucking great. I didn't like the build to it. The match was great. Hit all the right buttons, all the right narratives. I still wonder what that spot was going to be where Bayley tried to duct tape two kendo sticks together and then suspend them from. Did we actually get a payoff on that? I don't think we ever did. But they wouldn't tape together right, so she just gave up on the spot, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. But everything else was just fucking great. These two women are so, so, so good together. They really are. I mean, they're a classic. I think I liked Sasha's match with Becky last year in the Hell in a Cell. Like a little bit more, but other than that, this is it, man. The finish also being a delightful callback to two things. One, putting Bayley's head in the same chair that Bayley put Sasha's head in when she did the Pillman Eyes move to put her on the shelf for 12 minutes. I still think I still think that move when they Pillmanize Sasha with the fucking steel chair, put her in a neck brace. I still think that could have kept her out easily until the Rumble when she came back, won the Rumble out of nowhere, and then challenged Bayley for the title, which she won WrestleMania. I still think that was probably the better way to go, but this match was very, 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 very good. And then the other callback of that finish was, if you remember this, Bayley's ostensible reason for not being called up to the main roster along with Charlotte and Sasha and Becky was because Bayley had broken her hand. Bayley got a match versus Sasha at TakeOver Brooklyn, the greatest women's match of all time, and she was still, quote unquote, still nursing that broken hand. So Sasha took advantage of that all the time. She would stomp on it. She put it in between the ring steps and the ring post, and then drop kicked the ring steps. And then she put Bayley in the bank statement, and Bayley was reaching with her bad hand, reaching for the ropes. So Bayley stepped over while yanking back on that thing. She stomped on Bayley's bad hand over and over and over again. It's so brutal. She had the same spot at TakeOver Respect in the rematch, in the Iron Woman match. It's so brutal. It's an iconic thing. Like, your broken hand is the one you're using to reach for the ring ropes while I've got you in my submission move. I'm gonna stomp on that hand. It was great. So Bayley is in that chair, her neck's in the chair, and she reaches over and she's stomping, not on Bayley's hand, but you know how there's two parts of the chair legs? And if you stomp on them, if you push them together, that clamps the seat next to the little backrest thing, which is where her head is. So she's crushing Bayley's head even more in the chair by stomping on the legs of the chair. It's a great spot, and that's where Bayley taps out. It's perfect. Poetic. It's wonderful. awesome. So good. They're all doing a rematch. Not great. Sasha comes out. She does a lot of her old, like, I'm the boss. I'm the legend. I'm the blueprint. I'm the standard. I'm all the things that I am because I have merch to sell. And it's just, her episode of The Mandalorian, Sasha's, hasn't aired yet. I hope she has a better acting coach there than she does in WWE, because that's that moment where she threw the chair down in anger and looked at it. It didn't work. It wasn't, there was no honesty there. There was nothing in the moment that got her to that point. Anyway. So Bailey's in her past now, she says. They're also fudging over all the parts where Sasha was definitely going to turn on Bailey before Bailey turned on Sasha. It's just Bailey turned on Sasha at the weirdest fucking time, so there was no opportunity for Sasha to turn on Bailey. Again, this was not the best organic build to this match. The match was still good. Anyway, now she gets to focus on Asuka, which again is a match we saw. I guess they had four singles matches against each other over the summer. And then they had the tag matches, which, you know, Asuka and Kairi versus Bailey and Sasha or some combination therein. And it was just, I don't know, 75 of those. Like, it felt like so much of the summer was Asuka and Kairi versus Bailey and Sasha in some combination. And it just didn't feel right. That you're going to do that again and call it like one for the ages when we've already seen it. The match is going to be great. It's incapable of not being great. It's Asuka versus Sasha. It's going to be great, but it would be even better if I hadn't seen it a whole bunch of times recently. Anyway, that might not happen because Bailey comes out and she says, who are you kidding? A, that's my property, not the belt. That chair, you stole that out of my locker room. It's a cute touch. But Bailey says, you can't defend a belt. You never have. Now, they have to bring that up because that is true. Sasha has never defended a singles title. But do we think that whole thing between her and Charlotte, where Charlotte would lose the title to Sasha and then immediately win it back, that thing, do we think they were planning for this moment back then? No. It was just shitty booking. But now they got to justify their shitty booking with this storyline. That never should have happened. Sasha absolutely should have defended the title successfully at some point during that run. Of course she should have. But she didn't. So we got to call attention to it. But don't pat yourselves on the back for like, hey, long-term storytelling. No. Long-term storytelling is if you were telling the story at the beginning. This is just you filling in plot holes that you caused. Bailey says, let's have a match next week. So, yeah. Bailey versus Sasha next week. I feel like that match probably gets interrupted by a Raw invasion, our first of the season. I feel like that's probably what happens. I mean, I feel like that's an invasion spot. So that match never really takes place. Like it happens, but there's no clean finish. So Bailey gets to still be champion and Bailey gets to have a reason to be pissed at the Raw people. So she's captain, co-captain with Bianca of the SmackDown women's team. Because honestly, if Bailey isn't on the SmackDown women's team, I have no idea what the fuck they're going to do. So, okay, fine. I gotta mention this. This is so fucking stupid. Michael Cole talks about how this month we're doing a network series that's going on. This whole month we're doing things about the Undertaker, so we're calling it 30 Days of the Undertaker. Now they're not. They're calling it 30 Days of the Dead Man, but he says we're doing a thing for a month all about the Undertaker, and we're calling it 30 Days of the Undertaker. If they were calling it that, what's the pitch meeting for what we're going to call the thing?
So we're doing something for November about the Undertaker. What should we call it? I don't know. How many days are there in November? 30. I got it. 30 Days of the Undertaker. Perfect.
Like, who comes up with that? Just, you guys, come on. Come on. How about, here we go. Instead of 30 Days of the Dead Man, how about the Dead Month? Huh? It's terrible, but it's better than 30 Days of the Undertaker. Uso and Daniel Bryan, it's a good match. It's a very good match. It seems like it's too short, but also, and I believe this is the case. I believe Daniel Bryan was telling a story in the match about how that time he took off to go for paternity leave and be a dad to two kids, like one toddler and then a newborn, which, like, I'm just working with the toddler and I remember the fucking newborn and what the hell that was. But if you're telling me I got this one I've got right now, my Rosie Bear, who we call that because she's a fucking wild animal. Rosie Bear plus one of the little ones that cries all the time and shits its pants. You tell me I got to deal with both of those things? I would never, ever sleep. And I'd be worried all the time that the older one is going to accidentally drop something really heavy on the very soft skull of the little one. So, Brian is telling a story, it appears to me, of a guy who has not had a good night's sleep in a few months. And he didn't get a chance to work out as much as he wanted to. It looks like dadhood, double dadhood, has had Brian lose a step. He's still a great technical wrestler, but he's not as fast as he used to be. And he doesn't have his synapses aren't firing in his brain as fast as he would want them to. His reaction time is slowed. So it takes him longer to get from the one side of the ring to the other. And when somebody's countering a move, his brain doesn't process it in that split second fast enough to be able to get a counter of his own up, which is the story of how the match ends. And I believe that Daniel Bryan is telling that story for real. Like, actually has made a choice. That is how I'm going to lose this match. Because it just felt so much like that was the guy he was portraying. And I want that to be the case. They didn't bring that up all that much, but it's a good match. Daniel Bryan, you know, got a little pissed at points and was starting to do stuff, but it was an amazing moment. Apparently, there's a point where Roman comes out right before the commercial. And there's a great shot of Jay nursing some wound on the outside, and he's like leaning his face up against the corner of the barricade. So like he can see through one eye, Roman walking down toward him. It's just a really cool shot. And again, they can do this when they wanna just create art. Television is a medium with which you can create art, but you don't do that very often. So, you know, just saying. There's a lot of good counters and stuff like that. There was a great moment where Uso is putting the LaBelle lock and he's able to get to the rope. Brian is doing yes kicks in the corner, right? Brian does his running drop kick, right? And then he goes for another one. He always does it back to back. I've seen it many times where guys have tried to counter this with a super kick, and Brian dodges it or goes low and grabs a leg or whatever. Brian just ran into this one. Like, you could tell he tried to stop, which is why he got kicked. And, like, his momentum, his legs were still running forward as he was trying to, like, back up. So he got it full flush in the mouth and went down on both knees with his leg, with his torso bent back over his knees. It was great. Super kick down to his knees. He's out. Another one to Brian as he's basically out on his knees. And then up to the top rope, big splash for Uso. Now, Brian's unconscious, basically. He's in and out of consciousness. So Reigns enters the ring. And Uso, this is why I do love the Thunderdome. They didn't need to give him a mic to do this. They would have had to before. This is so great when it just feels like it's Jey Uso talking to his cousin, Roman Reigns. He says, I'm with you. I am, you're the head of the table. All right. I get it now. I understand now. I'm with you. I understand. So Roman turns his look from looking at Uso to looking over, right? At at the fallen Daniel Bryan. And Uso sees that Reigns is looking at Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan struggling to get back up to his legs. Nope. Uso spins around, another super kick, another big splash, says to Roman Reigns, I understand now. I love you too. I get it. I understand what this is all about. I understand. I understand now. I love you too. I understand. And Reigns, barely above a whisper, says, while looking at Daniel Bryan, make him understand. Make him understand how much you love me. Which is some of the most gangster shit I've ever seen on WWTV in my life. That's fucking great. Make him understand. Make him understand how much you love me. This is a mafia family now, with Roman Reigns as the Don and Paul Heyman as the consigliere. And now he's starting to recruit soldiers, capos, lieutenants. First capo, Jey Uso. I have no doubt second capo will be Jimmy Uso. Then we'll see where it goes from there. Who I would love to be the official enforcer for this fucking faction? Get Samoa Joe off the goddamn commentary table. Put him back in there. Put him in a damn suit. Have him never take the suit off. Just choking bitches out whenever Roman points him out. Take him out. And Samoa Joe just chokes out a dude. Never takes the suit off. That would be so fucking badass. Oh, I'm projecting here where they could take this. Could they take it to a point where it is more amazing than the disgusting insect feces? But Uso beats the hell out of Daniel Bryan, puts him on the announce table, and does the Uso splash from the top rope to the announce table. Now, he shorted it a little bit and caught himself in the ribs, but apparently he's fine. But Roman just smirks to himself and walks off. This is fucking phenomenal. Like, Daniel Bryan, who has said, this is it. This is my last run as a top superstar. I got to put over the next generation. If Daniel Bryan's last real feud as a full-time superstar is him trying to, like, be the good guy taking down this mafioso family, the Samoan, like, SWAT team thing that they're going to do with these guys. I mean, it's just... I mean, you can inject that straight into my eyeballs. I would love that so much. I mean, if it's the first time we saw Daniel Bryan really put over Roman Reigns was that Fastlane match. Remember after Roman won the Royal Rumble and everyone booed the fuck out of him and everyone was like, Daniel Bryan should have won or whatever. And they're like, okay, great, fine. Let's have this match. This is going to be the match for Roman's spot in the main event of WrestleMania. Roman, you have to beat Daniel Bryan at Fastlane. It was a great match. Roman wasn't near as prepared then as he is now to be this guy. But Daniel Bryan made you believe that one day he would be in that match. That was the first time that Daniel Bryan put over Roman Reigns. We were all pissed about it. But if Roman gets put over by Daniel Bryan like this, in a way to build maximum hatred for Roman Reigns by taking out Daniel Bryan for good. God damn. God damn, that would be some fucking good shit, pal. So all I have to do is just pray that Vince keeps his grubby little mitts and his stinky little nose off of and out of this whole creative process. Because whatever is going on to create this has to continue. It has to. Because right now this is so good that I am willing to at least partially overlook a story about how a guy in his 30s is fucking a teenager. That was SmackDown. This has been Sour Graps. I have been a hairier version of myself, Alex Pulaski. This is my merch. It's a... This is the logo for Sour Graps. People on YouTube can see this. On Wednesday, I was going to go as for the Halloween Havoc show. I was going to go as the logo of Sour Graps. I got this tube of purple face paint, and I was going to do my whole face as the logo. Right. Trouble was the paint inside the tube was a lot darker than the outside of the tube. So when I put it on, it looked like I was wearing blackface. And I didn't do that because this might be a little late to tell people, but if you wear blackface for a Halloween costume, you're a piece of shit. Even if it's accidental and you wanted it to look purple, it didn't look purple. It looked really, really dark purple. Don't do that. Don't wear blackface as part of a Halloween costume, but... On Tuesday, if you do live in America, vote. If you haven't voted already, vote. Vote. It's very possible that I may do a really late night edition of Sour Graps on Monday after I get a chance to watch Raw on Monday night because I don't know if I'll be in the right state of mind on Tuesday to do one of these. So stay tuned. I'll announce it on my Twitter if I end up doing it that way. I love all of you guys. We are on the precipice of something possibly very scary to me in this world. And doing this twice a week and the Wednesday show every Wednesday is one of the only things that allows my anxiety to tamper down a little bit. So thank you all for watching and listening. I love you all. Doing this show is great, but everything else sucks.